Part 18, Chapter 3. Brown Limper Staffer sat in his new palatial office and stared down at the offending object on the desk. He was revolted. Things had been moving well lately. The domed government building, some said it had been the state capitol building, had been partially restored and even its dome painted white. The halls had been refinished. A chamber had been provided for council sessions, a very ideal chamber with a high dais and bench on one end and wooden seats before it. Huge, upholstered cyclo executive desks had been carted in to furnish separate offices for council members. They were a bit dwarfing to sit at, but if one put a man chair on a box behind them, they were all right. A hotel had been opened that provided living space for dignitaries and important visitors, and under the ministrations of a cook from Tibet, it was serving very passable meals on real plates. The tutelage he was getting while standing in the shadows of a post over at the compound at night was truly excellent. Utterly invaluable data about government. Turl hardly deserved the extreme conditions of living in a cage. The cyclo had repented and was doing all he could to help. How misunderstood the cyclos were! The fruits of such learning were already showing up. It was taking a little time, and it required a considerable amount of political skill, but Turl had traveled all over the universes as one of the most trusted executives of intergalactic mining, and the things he knew about government and politics were far in excess of anything else available. Take this matter of having too numerous a council. The tribal chiefs from over the world resented having to come here and spend endless time wrangling in the chamber. They had their own tribal affairs to look after. They were also too numerous, 30 of them, to really get anything done. And it was almost with joy that they divided the world up into 5 continents, with 1 representative from each. From an unwieldy throng of 30, the council had been reduced to a more easily handled 5. And when it was explained to them that their own tribal work was far more vital than this humdrum paper shuffling at the council, and that the most competent men were needed at home, they had gladly pushed some cousins and such into the 5 continental seats. The 5-man council, of course, was a bit unwieldy, and it was in the process now of appointing a 2-man executive. With a little more work and the application of some invaluable tips Turl had given him, sometime in the coming weeks, Brown Limper would find himself the council representative with authority to act independently in the name of the council, assisted only by the council secretary, who, of course, did not need to have a vote and would be required just to sign his name. It would be so much neater. The Scots had been a bit of trouble. They had protested Scotland being included with Europe, but it was shown that it always had been. This made their representative a German from a tribe in the Alps. Well, majority votes of the old council had handled that, and now there were no more of those accursed Scots around, challenging every sensible measure proposed by Brown Limper. The tribes were satisfied. They had been given title to all the lands about them with absolute right to allocate them as they chose. They had each been given the exclusive ownership of the ancient cities and anything contained therein. This had made Brown Limper quite popular with the chiefs of most tribes, but not the Scots, of course. Nothing could please them. They had had the nerve to point out that this gave all property and the whole continent of America and everything in it to Brown Limper. But that was quashed by simply indicating that there were 4 tribes in America now. British Columbia, where 2 people had been found, the Sierra Nevada, where 4 people had been found, the little group of Indians to the south, and Brown Limper's. That they all now lived in Brown Limper's village had been quite beside the point. The selection of a capital had been another victory. For some reason, some tribes thought the world capital should be in their area. Some even thought it should shift about. But when it was pointed out how much trouble and expense it was to maintain a capital, and that brown, limper staffer, out of the goodness of his heart, and with philanthropy as his only motive, would let his tribe pay all the costs, there was no further argument. The world capital had been decreed to be Denver, although its name, one of these days, would be changed to Staffer. The resolution of the old council, before it became only five, to establish a planetary bank was what had started this trouble now before him. A Scot named McAdam had been called in, and he had advised them that the galactic credits they had would be meaningless to Earth people at this time. Instead, he proposed that he and a German now residing in Switzerland, a German who had an awful lot of dairy cows and home cheese factories, be granted a charter. They would issue currency to a tribe, to the amount of land it had in actual productive use, and in return, they would charge a small percent. It was a good idea, for any tribe could only get more currency by getting more area into productive use. The currency was then backed by the Tribal Lands of Earth. The bank was to be called the Earth Planetary Bank, and the charter given it was quite broad and sweeping. With amazing speed, they had printed currency. The German had come in on it because he had a brother who had preserved the art of making woodcutting blocks that printed on paper. They had found warehouses full of untouched currency paper in an old ruin called London, and hand presses in a town once called Zurich. In no time at all, they were issuing currency. The notes only had one denomination, one Earth credit. Apparently, they had made one trial issue, and it didn't go. People didn't know what to do with it. They had been bartering with horses and such like, and they had to be taught what money was. So they had made a second issue. It was a specimen of this second issue that was lying on Brown Limper's desk and giving him much trouble. Not just trouble, but a revulsion so deep it was making him ill. The woodblock bill was very nicely printed. It said Earth Planetary Bank. It had a figure 1 in each corner. It had one credit spelled out in all the languages and calligraphy used by existing tribes. It had legal tender for all debts, private and public, on it, similarly repeated in the various tongues. It had exchangeable for one credit at the bank offices of Zurich and London or any branch of the Earth Planetary Bank. It had secured by the tribal lands of the tribes of Earth as attested in production. It had, by charter of the Council of Earth. And it had the signatures of the two bank directors. All that was fine. But it had, squarely in the center of it, in a big oval, a portrait of Johnny Goodboy Tyler. They had copied a picture of him somebody had taken with a picto recorder. There he was in a buckskin hunting shirt, bare-headed, a silly look on his face somebody thought must be noble or something. And of all things, he had a blast gun in his hand. Worse! There was his name curled over the top of the picture. Johnny Goodboy Tyler. And even worse, on the scroll under the picture it said, Conqueror of the Cyclos. Nauseating. Awful. But how could the bank make such a blunder? Not 15 minutes ago, he had finished a conversation with McAdam on the radio. McAdam had explained that the first issue was not popular at all, so they had instantly gotten out this second issue. It seemed people might not know what money was, but they could comprehend Johnny Goodboy Tyler. And in some places, they were not using it as money, but putting it up on their walls, even framing it. Yes, bundles of it now had gone to every tribe. No, they couldn't be recalled, for it would hurt the bank's credit. Brown Limper had tried to explain that this was totally against the council's intentions in chartering the bank. There had been a unanimous council resolution that there must be no more war. The resolution had meant War between tribes is hereby forbidden, but Brown Limper had seen that it was worded so as to include all war, everywhere, including interplanetary. This banknote, he had explained with all the logic he could bring to bear, was contrary to that anti-war resolution. They had this fellow brandishing a weapon, and they were actually inciting war in the future against the Cyclos and who knew who else. McAdam had been sorry, and so had the German in Zurich, but they really didn't sound sorry. They had their charter, and if the Council wanted to ruin its own credit, it would be unfortunate if funds were cut off to America in the future. So the charter must stay valid and unchanged, and the bank must do what it saw fit to do in order to carry on its business. And it would be too bad when the World Court, now in planning, convened if it had as its first suit a member of the bank against the Council for breach of trust and corollary expenses. No, Brown Limper thought gloomily. They didn't sound sorry. He would take no more advice from Council members about this. He would go down and get some while standing in the shadows of the post near the cage. But he didn't have any real hope.
Johnny Goodboy Tyler, conqueror of Cyclos. Pah!
Brown Limper spat on the bill. He suddenly seized the bill and tore it frantically into little pieces. Then he threw the pieces around with angry gestures. After that, he gathered them all up again and with a set, malevolent expression on his face, burned them. Then he pulverized the ashes with his fist. But somebody came in soon after and said with a delighted smile,
"Have you seen the new banknote?"
And waved one. Brown Limper rushed out of the room and found a place to vomit. Later, calmer, he determined that even though they were all against him, he would continue to do his very best for Earth. He would really get that Tyler.